Hey there everyone, before we get into the show, I just want to shamelessly self-promote coffee.com/mystarwarslifedebt. You can join up as a member, you can do a one-off donation, or you can pick up some of our digital stuff on the merch store, which is right there on coffee.com/mystarwarslifedebt. So, please head on over there, check it out if you want to support the show and the podcast. Thank you very much, guys. Now, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to the Life Day podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Lum, and I promise you, I promise from the bottom of my heart. So this is the final part of the Rebels Revisited series. Hello, Lee. One of my cats has come for a fuss. I thought that it would only be like maybe one episode. That one episode stretched to over an hour. So then I thought, right, oh, the next one will not be that long. That was an hour and a half. So I'm here. I'm doing season four. Rebels Revisited. Of just the episodes that are most likely relevant to the Ahsoka series. So let's just jump into the episode. It's going to be a long one again, folks. So jumping in, let's do some business. You can visit the blog at mystarwarslifedebt.com. You can find it on Facebook, facebook.com/lifedebtblogpod. You can follow me on Twitter at bloodyon, BLODYORME. Instagram.com/mystarwarslifedebt and mystarwarslifedebt@threads.com. And if you would like to contribute to the upkeep of the blog and podcast, you can do so in a couple of ways. You can head over to coffee.com/mystarwarslifedebt. That's ko-fi.com/mystarwarslifedebt. And you can drop a donation in there. Or if you'd like to buy some of the bonus content, you can do that as well. We've got the Life Day Holiday Special, aka The Breaking of a Fan, and Yub Nubbin, a Life Day Podcast Season 1. Both are available to purchase at coffee.com/mystarwarslifedebt. But if you'd like to become a member, you can head over to patreon.com/mystarwarslifedebt, where for £3 a month, you get ad-free podcast episodes, ad-free blog posts. You get your name on a devoted thank you page, and you get access to the Life Debt Holiday Special, The Breaking of a Fan, and Yub Nubbin Seasons 1 and 2 at no extra charge. So that's £3 a month at patreon.com/mystarwarslifedebt. Now, without further ado, I'm not going to keep you. So let's dive in to the last season of Rebels, well, the episodes that's quite possibly linked to Ahsoka. Let's go for it. Hello and welcome to Rebels Revisited. I'm your host, Johnny Orme, and today we are taking our first steps into the final season of Rebels with the two-part season opener, Heroes of Mandalore. So it starts out on Mandalore with Sabine Wren leading Kanan, Ezra, Chopper, and a group of Clan Wren members taking out an Imperial facility on Mandalore to try and rescue Sabine's father. They get there, they invade,
they take over, but they find out that her father isn't there, he's actually in part of a convoy, which they are able to quickly locate. So Sabine's mother and brother arrive at this facility, and they hold it down while Sabine takes Fenrau, Kanan, Ezra, and Chopper, and they end up being assisted by Bo-Katan. They get to the convoy, and through a series of mishaps and general Ezra-ness, they manage to rescue Sabine's father as the vehicle he is in falls off the edge of a cliff. Ezra gives him a jetpack, and he manages to get away whilst Ezra runs up the side of up the Imperial troop transports as they are falling, and is helped by Sabine. You know, they're very appreciative of the help from Bo-Katan and her group, and when they get in touch with Sabine's Sabine's mother to say, "What, we've got him, we've got him," Sabine hears a very familiar sounding noise during in the background, and she recognizes it because it's a weapon that she created. She takes their group to the location where her mum and her brother were, and they find a desolate wasteland, essentially, with ruins of Mandalorian armor. And Sabine kneels over one of the sets of armor and is in tears. That's the end of episode one. Episode two starts up exactly where it left off, and Sabine confesses that she created the weapon that did this. You know, it was her who, she created this weapon that the Empire could use against Mandalorians. She didn't expect it to be used against Mandalorians, she expected it to be a weapon of peace, but now they're using it against, her family. It turns out that Sabine's mother and brother were at the edge of the blast, and were able to escape, essentially hiding in an Imperial vessel. But before they can leave, a group of Mandalorian super commandos arrive with some TIE fighters. Ezra and Bo-Katan take on the TIE fighters and blow them both up. But the Imperial Super Commandos have the group surrounded, a Mandalorian Fang fighter arrives. It's one of Bo-Katan's people, and they escape in that after the fighter takes out the rest of the commandos. On the ship, Bo-Katan is angry that Sabine has betrayed her people by creating this weapon, and Sabine turns around and is like, "Look, I thought I destroyed everything to do with this. You know, I destroyed the prototype. You know, I thought I'd wiped out the plans. Obviously, you know, they found something, they were able to get their hands on something, and they've built it. But the good thing about it is it's not working at full capacity." As we find out in a scene where Tar Saxon, Gar Saxon's brother, and now acting governor of Mandalore, is communicating with Thrawn, and, you know, saying, look, this weapon you've asked for, it works. But Thrawn knows that it's not fully functional. He knows it's not at full operating capacity, and instructs Saxon to find Sabine Wren and get her to, you know, increase the power. When the Fang fighter arrives at Bo-Katan's base of operations, Sabine is basically, you know, held up at gunpoint by Bo-Katan's people. And Sabine's like, "Look, yeah, I did create this. I created it because I thought we were making weapons of peace. You know, a peacekeeping machine rather than something that they would use to kill our people. And, you know, I've come back to sort this. I've come back to make things right. And Bo-Katan's like, look, you know, I had my doubts about her, but, you know, she's, you know, she seems to be on the up and up. You know, she is here to help. So everyone backs down. And they come up with a plan to board Saxon's Star Destroyer, which is where he would obviously be keeping this weapon, because it's a big secret. And split into two teams. One team will destroy the weapon. The other will wipe out any evidence of the of its existence. So Sabine and Bo-Katan lead a group onto the Star Destroyer, including Fenrir, Kanan, Ezra, and Chopper, and Sabine's brother Tristan. Kanan, Ezra, and Chopper go to wipe the files. They get caught out in the hangar bay and are under siege by two ATDPs, but Bo-Katan and Sabine manage to get to the weapon, which has been removed from the walker that it was installed in. And once they find the reactor, the arc reactor that it uses to operate, and they're about to destroy it when it is activated by Saxon, who is now wearing wearing stormtrooper armor rather than his Beskar Mandalorian armor, because it's the alloy within Beskar that the weapon reacts with and basically incinerates the wearer. Saxon's attaché basically turns around and is like, look, you said, you know, why are you using this against our people? You know, the Empire, you're doing as the Empire said. You know, if you make this weapon super powerful, they'll just use it against us. And Saxon's like, no, not if we're loyal. And he basically tries to get Sabine to, you know, increase its power. Going back to a conversation that they had during the meeting, I think Fenrir asks her if it could be used against stormtroopers, and Sabine says, I've wondered if it could. And I think it's probably, you know, you can see she's played with that possibility, so she would know how to do it. So when she's sorting out the reactor for Saxon, what she actually does is she switches it to focus on stormtrooper armor. And when he goes to activate it, which in his mind he'd be taking out all of the Mandalorians on the ship, but what he ends up doing is, of course, zapping himself and all of his troopers. Now, it's not at full power, so it's only, you know, hurting them all. And Bo-Katan's like, look, you could let them all die by doing this. Or, you know, in that, essentially, if you were to do that, that's a coward's way out. You know, and we don't want to win Mandalore back by cowardly means. You know, we need to do this with honor and hope and bring hope to the people. So Sabine goes to destroy the machine. Of course, Kanan and Ezra and Chopper manage to wipe out all evidence of the weapon from the Imperial system. And in destroying the machine, it causes a chain reaction that basically makes destroys the Star Destroyer. But not before the Mandalorians and the Rebels get away. It ends with Bo-Katan, Sabine, and Ursa Wren discussing leadership of the Mandalorian people during a, you know, basically fighting off the Empire. And Sabine hands Bo-Katan the Darksaber and says, look, it came to me so I could give it to you. You have the power. You know, the people will follow you. And they open the ship, the hatch of the ship, to reveal a number of Mandalorian clan leaders, all offering their support to Bo-Katan. And the supporters included Clan Rook, Clan Vizsla, and Clan Krees. Now, Clan Vizsla, of course, is the clan that Pre Vizsla was part of. Clan Rook. Now, I wonder if this is to if that is the clan that one of Darth Maul's higher echelon Mandalorians was called Rook. Now, I wonder if that's part. She's part of that family. And of course, Clan Krees, which is Bo-Katan's family. And Fen Rau pledges the support of the Protectors. All of the Mandalorians assemble, and of course, Clan Ren pledge support as well. And you know, all of them kneel before Bo-Katan. Sabine and Ezra share a look and a nod, and we fade to credits. As far as season openers go, this felt like the most low key of all of the season openers. But part of me, it doesn't feel like, hey, we're going to a new season and this is the big thing. What they've done is they've essentially continued the story from season 3. I feel like this is a direct continuation from the end of Zero Hour. And then the gap in time goes from here to the next episodes. So maybe they were planning on having this as part of season 3, but like the Thrawn storyline kind of grew. And they wanted to kind of give a bit of breathing space. It really does feel like it could have fitted in nicely with season 3. If they kind of jiggled the order of episodes around, you could have had like the Sabine getting the Darksaber earlier on in the first half, and have like the set, like kind of like the mid-season finale being like Trials of the Dykes at Darksaber, and then like the mid-season premiere being the episode where she fights Gar Saxon, and then this would happen. Then you could have had Zero Hour. It could have been like a 4-part finale where it's like these battles on two fronts. But I kind of get why they did it this way. Zero Hour was definitely, you know, was the obvious conclusion to the series. But you couldn't have had like, but you kind of feel like Ezra, Kanan, and Chopper are there to help Sabine after her and Clan Ren helped the rebels in Zero Hour. So, you know, they're helping each other out. It's like this mutual assistance. Hello, Lily. So it kind of felt, it feels like this is just a direct follow-on. It's cool to see Mandalore, and we get to learn more about why the cities of Mandalore are in these like domes, because the constant fighting between the Mandalorian clans basically turned the planet into a wasteland. And it's like, okay, can we have more stories about Mandalorians, please? Of course we've got the Mandalorian series, but you know, we're talking about ancient Mandalore here, and I'd love to kind of learn more about that and get more Mandalorian history, because I think that'd be so cool. We finally also learn why Sabine left the Empire and why she has, you know, why she was seen to be a disgrace by her family and to her family. You know, she created this weapon that, you know, kills her people. You know, and it's only going to be targeted to them because they're the only ones who wear Beskar armor. You know, it's like, okay, what did you think was going to happen? But, you know, at the time when Sabine was part of the Imperial Academy, she fully believed in the Empire. You know, she hadn't seen the darker side of the Empire. She just saw them as this group who've come, you know, not essentially this group who've come in, but it's like the governing body, you know, and, you know, they come in and they establish an academy and they take kids in to learn and, you know, they become a part of the Imperial machine. And Sabine is able to do, you know, I mean, she was a child prodigy. You know, she entered the academy early because of her skills with weapon building. And this was one of the things that she created. And, you know, she just didn't see the darker side of the Empire. You know, the people who would come onto a planet and just take out everyone. But of course, it's the Imperial propaganda that she would have seen and understood and believed. So, you know, until she saw it with her own eyes, you know, what they were going to do with this machine, you know, she just thought she was doing... It's like Galen Erso believing that, you know, his experiments and his work with the kyber crystals was to create a form of, like, a cheap supply of energy to power this space station. But actually he's creating the weapon that destroys Alderaan. You know, they are led to believe that the Empire is alright. They are led to believe that the work they're doing is good. And, you know, it's just more and more and more Imperial manipulation. I mean, of course, we get to see Ezra doing Ezra stuff, so there's Ezra shenanigans. He spends most of the first episode bouncing around the sky with a Mandalorian jetpack. At first, it's kind of, Ezra's not got a clue what he's doing with a jetpack, but then it just gets old pretty quickly. By the time we get into the battle where they rescue Sabine's dad, Auric, it's tired. It really is. And it's basically the build-up to him handing over the... It's him handing over the jetpack to Auric so he can escape the falling transport. And he's like, yeah, I'm better without it anyway. And he's like, oh, well, that would have been funny if it hadn't gone on so long. But, you know, it's... You know, Rebels is one of those... It's like the Clone Wars. They are aimed at a specific age group, but then we all watch it. So, you know, those jokes probably play better with younger viewers than they do with me. But, you know, I'm not target audience. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I find it a bit dull now. I find that ongoing gag a bit dull, but I bet, like, someone who's 6, 7, or 8 would like it, would enjoy it, so, yeah. I mean, the big thing for this is, where this episode ends, the Mandalorians are currently going through a civil war to get rid of the Empire on Mandalore, and this is a massive blow to the Empire. You know, they lose the governor of Mandalore, who, of course, is the Imperial head honcho on the planet. And, you know, the Star Destroyer that is his flagship is destroyed, you know, but we still see two Star Destroyers on the, you know, above the city. So, you know, the Imperial presence isn't gone, but they've had a blow. And I'm wondering if the Knight of a Thousand Tears will kind of have... I believe the Night of a Thousand Deers happens after Rebels. But we don't, we still don't know when it happens. And I wonder if it happens kind of after this, whilst the rest of the rebellion is going, it's got to happen. It's got to happen before the Return of the Jedi. And we've got about a year and change before the Battle of Scarif at this point in Rebels. So from A New Hope to Empire, there's 3 years. So we're 5 years. So sometime in the 5 years between this and Return of the Jedi, so it's 10 years before Mandalorian, the Night of a Thousand Deers has got to happen at some point in the first 5 years after this. For the sole reason that I can't imagine Sabine wouldn't have heard about it. But yeah, that's the thing. She would have heard about it. Or would she? I don't know. But yeah, the Night of a Thousand Deers will have happened after this. And I wonder if Moff Gideon, or, before he became Moff, Gideon before he's Moff Gideon, is on one of those Star Destroyers at the end. Which would be cool. And how does he get the Darksaber? Oh god, I need to know these things. But yeah, I really, we've got a 10-year gap between this and The Mandalorian, and a ton of stuff goes down. So, I want to know. Even if we just find out what the Night of a Thousand Tears is, then, we can piece together the timeline, and that would be just fantastic. But, God, when does it happen? And how long has Gideon had the Darksaber? Because, of course, now, at the end of the episode, it's in the possession of Bo-Katan. So, Moff Gideon gets it, and according to rumours, Katie Sackhoff is playing Bo-Katan in live action after doing the voice in Clone Wars and Rebels. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to what this could be, and what the Night of a Thousand Tears is. If Lucasfilm Story Group just want to send me everything they have on that, that'd be great. It doesn't need to be neat, doesn't need to be in a book or a comic or anything, just send me your notes. Give me those notes, please. In terms of season openers, this isn't groundbreaking. It doesn't, hit the ground, it does hit the ground running, but in a completely different way to Siege of Lothal and, Spark of Rebellion, and I can't even, oh god, what's the season 3 premiere called? I can't remember, but it doesn't have the same kind of, I don't know, there's something about it, it doesn't feel as boom, but then, with this being the final season, you don't want it to go in, because I still think, as much as I love, seasons 1 and 2, take Twilight of the Apprentice out of the equation, Siege of Lothal for me hands down is one of the best it's one of the best episodes, as well as Spark of Rebellion. So and then the season 3 opener, again, it hit, you're in there, you're going with a bang, and this one, yes, you're going with a bang, but it just doesn't feel as heavy-hitting as the previous 3 seasons. But that's because the season starts off here and builds up. And you get it. I get why they did it, because they didn't want to go, boom, hit you really hard. And because then it becomes a slow build for the rest of the season. So you'd have this massive peak and a massive drop down in kind of pacing and everything. So I get why it doesn't feel that it's not got the kind of magnitude of those other two episodes, of the other three premieres. But it's still great, and it's more Mandalorian content. Content about Mandalorians, you can't go wrong right now. There we go. This is the first, like I said, this is the first part of season 4, which is the final season. So, yeah, over the next few weeks, we're going to be heading towards the end of Rebels Revisited. I think having like taken a couple of breaks, my goal of hitting the weekend of Star Wars Celebration with the final episode of season 4, the final episode of Rebels Revisited, I'm missing out there, but hey, Celebration ain't happening this year, so those plans are gone anyway. We're gonna be hitting the end of Rebels Revisited, in the next 14 or 15 weeks. So this isn't gonna be the end of this slot, this content slot. I've got an idea. I know what I'm gonna do next. Same format. You know, it's gonna be kind of like mini bite-sized reviews of something, and for the most part, I haven't seen, it's a series, and I haven't seen all of it. I've seen probably a handful of episodes from the first season, and maybe one episode from the second season, but now I have Disney Plus, it's all on there, so I'm totally going in for it. But what I may do after I finish season 4 is discuss the two Kanan graphic novels that were released. But don't quote me on that, it depends on how I get on with the rest of the comic reading. But yeah, I think we've got, so there's this one, there's 15 full episodes of season 1, of season 4, so 14, 13, 12, so 12 weeks I think, and so there's going to be 12 episodes for season 4, so yes, in 12 weeks, expect to hear some little tidbits of what will be coming up. So before I go, I'd like to thank all of you dear Patreon members for your ongoing support and continued contributions to the Life Debt blog project, whatever we're calling it. They are greatly appreciated, especially in my time of unemployment, however long that may last. So thank you, it's much appreciated, and it all does go towards stuff for the blog and the podcast. Oh, did I just say that? Yes. I've been working on some ideas on bringing the Life Debt podcast back. So watch this space. Probably won't be for another couple of weeks whilst I kind of get all of my kind of ideas down and finalised on how it's going to work. It's going to be a bit more structured. That's the one thing that I'm planning. A bit more structured. All this other stuff, but that's not the point. The point is, the podcast will be coming back soon. Something else to look forward to. More content. Thank you very much. all of you for your continued contributions, for your ongoing support, and without further ado, punch it, Chewy.
Hello and welcome to Rebels Revisited. I'm your host, Johnny Orr, and today we're taking a look at the episode Wolves and a Door. Ezra, Sabine, Chopper, and Zeb are all looking at the stone that the Loth Wolves gave Ezra. Sabine's trying to make a sense of it, but is struggling. She wants to see the artwork on the temple, but the temple is on the other side of the planet. But Ezra says, oh, I've got an idea. So he manages to summon 4 Loth Wolves. The white one and 3 regular ones. And after a little bit of coercing of Zeb to ride a Loth Wolf, the Ghost crew basically ride the wolves. One of the wolves picks up Chopper in his mouth, so Chopper isn't very happy. And the wolves run through the fields and into the planet. And come out on the other side, where the Ghost crew wake up and head towards the temple. At the temple, Ezra and Sabine steal some Biker Scout armor by using an old hologram of Grand Admiral Thrawn to distract them. And they get close to the temple, where Minister Haydn, who looks very much like the weird priest-monk-looking bloke from Rogue One, from Vader's castle. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, which is really annoying. But, yeah, he kind of looks like him. Speaks to the Emperor, and they say, and he says, basically, look, we've found more artwork that represents the gods of Mortis. Palpatine's like, look, I want you to get in there. I want the power of that Jedi temple. And then Palpatine is played by none other than Ian McDiarmid, which is so cool. Getting him back into the season. Haydn basically makes this, so basically gets them to begin a drilling operation, but the drilling operation is put on hold because some more of the workers have found more art. Sabine and Ezra basically go and look at the mural of the Mortis gods, the father, the son, and the daughter. And Sabine figures out that they need to somehow manipulate the art, the painting, to open up a doorway. Ezra's about to try when they are approached by some stormtroopers. Ezra hides, and Sabine is detained. So whilst Ezra tries to figure out, he uses the Force to manipulate the artwork so that some of the lines meet up, which causes the artwork to move, and the daughter faces the father. The father lowers his hand and points past the sun, and the images of the Loth Wolves basically run across the wall, and then start running in a circle. And Ezra's like, I don't know what I'm doing, don't know what I'm doing. And he puts his hand on the wall where the Loth, like, in the circle, like, within the circle that the Loth Wolves are creating. And his hand goes straight through. But by this point, Haydn has spoken with Sabine, but met Sabine. And then there's an alert that draws them all to Ezra. Hera, Zeb, and Chopper have to move from their location because the searchlights are going. And when Haydn, with Sabine and a contingent of troopers, regular and death troopers, arrive, Ezra basically just runs into the wall, through the wall, and he's followed by two stormtroopers who basically hit the wall and hit the deck. And that's that. That's the episode. So we're getting to some really heavy force mysticism stuff here. I think it's great that Filoni is bringing back the Mortis gods. I still think there's so much more we can learn about them, learn from those characters, about the Force. But at the same time, I don't really want to learn too much about the Force because, you know, the Force is steeped in mysticism and, you know, you don't want to get too many answers about it because then it's not quite so mystic if there's answers. So it's like when they introduce things like this, that just adds more and more layers of questions that you want to add, that you want to ask, then, you know, that's fantastic. And it keeps that mysticism going. Like a moving painting on a wall of a mountain, just, you know, obviously. And this was the only way that they get in because the other doors to the Jedi Temple have sealed themselves off, obviously, from the Empire. Because, you know, the Force. So, yeah, like, heavy Force mysticism. Hera, basically, you can tell that Hera is now afraid of anyone doing different missions as not part of the family, because, who, you know, like, met family members doing missions like this, because, you know, she's lost Kanan and she doesn't want to lose anyone else. And, you know, she visualizes Kanan beside her at one point when she tells Ezra and Sabine to, you know, carry on with their mission. You know, so she's still hurt and she's still looking to Kanan for guidance, even if it's just the memory of Kanan that is helping her make these choices and understand. And Zeb's there and he says, look, you know why we're here. Think about why we came here. And, you know, she thinking of Kanan as well, which is like, right, yeah, guys, go do your mission. But as soon as I say, come back, you come back. Because she's scared of losing them. And, you know, up until recently, she thought that they were invincible, you know. They always got out of trouble. They always won. They always survived. And, you know, this is a real knock to her because, you know, that has suddenly changed. And it's tough. So, yeah, I mean, this is a big prelude episode to something big. It's setting up the next part, and it basically, rather than have it, you know, 2 minutes at the beginning of one episode saying, hey, look, this is how we got in to this thing, you know, they gave it an episode to set up, and, you know, Dave Filoni said, this season is all killer, no filler. And he's right, there isn't any filler. This episode was needed to tell this story. It's all building, all kind of building on this, on everything that's happened throughout this series. And it's really well played, absolutely fantastically well played. Bringing back the Jedi Temple is a stroke of brilliance. It's been probably two of the best episodes have been set in the Jedi Temple, and those are from seasons 1 and 2. So, you know, going back there, you know, you completely understand why, you completely get it. They needed to do it, and yeah, there we go. Only a few more days left until Rebels Remembered, and the culmination of this show. So yeah, a few more days to go. But thank you for listening, everyone, and I'll be back tomorrow. So punch it, Chewie.
Hi, I'm Guy. I have quadriplegic cerebral palsy, and Johnny is one of my carers. Please help me and sign up to bitrom.com/mystarwarslifedebt so he can stop talking about Star Wars to me. It would mean a lot to me. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Rebels Revisited. I'm your host Johnny Orme, and today we're taking a look at A World Between Worlds. So let's just get right into it. So Ezra goes into the temple through the portal, and we hear voices from the Jedi of the past and the future and the present. So we hear Qui-Gon, Yoda, Obi-Wan, Rey, Kanan. I believe we hear Luke as well, and Vader. Not Vader, Anakin. And, you know, Ezra realizes he's in some sort of weird kind of place where it's just space around him with a pathway and doors. And he follows the pathway around, hearing these voices, and until he spots Morai the Convor, and he goes to that doorway, and inside through the doorway he sees the Vader Ahsoka fight from Twilight of the Apprentice, from the moment where Ahsoka threw him out of the temple as the door closed, and her and Vader continued to fight. And Vader is about to kill Ahsoka when Ezra realizes that he can go into through this door and pull Ahsoka through. It renders them unconscious momentarily. And when they both come to, Ezra kind of tries to vaguely explain what's gone on, and he tells her, well, he doesn't tell her, but he basically, he does tell her that Kanan's gone. Kanan has passed away. And he gets the idea that he can bring Kanan back. So he follows one of the threads past a load of doorways, and he keeps hearing Kanan from various places, from various times through there, throughout the past. And he reaches the doorway that shows Kanan fending off the explosion, and Ahsoka, he's like, look, I can reach him, and Ahsoka just is like, no, you can't do that, because Kanan was exactly where he needed to be at that point. And if Ezra was to grab Kanan then, the explosion would have killed not just Kanan, but Ezra and Hera and Sabine as well. So there was no saving Kanan. And Ezra realizes that that was his final lesson, that you can't just bring people back from the dead. What he did was he stopped Ahsoka from dying, but I'm gonna get into that in a minute. I'm just having to move and I've hurt my back. After he's had that revelation about Kanan, they hear a noise coming from that doorway, and it's Palpatine with a bowl of blue fire that we saw in Clone Wars. And he does some of his Sith magic stuff and sends the blue fire through the doorway, and it chases down Ahsoka and Ezra. And as they run through the world between worlds, it grabs Ezra's foot and starts to drag him back to the doorway, because Palpatine wants Ezra to help him come through. But Ahsoka manages to use her lightsabers to cut the tendrils of fire off of Ezra. And she's already injured because she tried to use the Force to, you know, stop the fire from coming through, but it was too powerful for her. So as her and Ezra keep running, they decide to split up. And Ezra says, "When you come back, find me." And she's like, "I will, I promise." And she jumps through a doorway and ends up back on Malachor at the Sith Temple. And she starts walking. It was her and Morai. And she starts walking towards the triangular doorway that we see her walking through in at the end of Twilight of the Apprentice. So it was, she was always meant to be saved by Ezra. That was part of the Force's plan, I guess. So Ezra manages to run through the doorway and escape, and Palpatine's not too happy. Meanwhile, whilst all this is going on, Sabine has been entertaining Minister Hayden, who is basically talking about the murals of the father, the daughter, and the son that have been found countless places, whilst Hera and Zeb are finding a way of getting Sabine out. So Hera manages to sabotage the the building that they're in. It's like it's on rockets, so it can be easily moved, I guess. And she sabotages the rockets on one end to lift off. So as it starts lifting off, Zeb basically taps on the wall, and Sabine's like, "Oh, I know that language." So she manages to find a way out, get out without being injured, whilst all the troopers and Hayden are, you know, pretty much, unsure of what to do. They race to the doorway where Ezra just comes out, and they're like, "We need to go." And he's like, "No, we need to close this." And thanks to the conversations she's been having with Hayden, Sabine now knows that if he uses the circle with the sun's hand in, that will close the temple. So as Ezra's doing that, the rest of the crew are fighting off the troopers, and then Chopper comes along on one of the excavators and basically just chases them all the way until... Oh, Dottie has seen a fly. Dottie's too small to get the fly. It's okay. It's okay. Yep, here we go. So, they get onto the excavator whilst... And the temple, basically vanishes. It sinks into the ground. The excavator basically just gets away in time. Ezra, basically, because he's absolutely wiped out from using the Force to close the temple and everything, he's unconscious in the excavator. But when he wakes up, Sabine tells him that he needs to go outside, and he goes outside to find Hera stood there on just a vast plain, and there's a stone in the ground. And he says, "Right, this is where me and Kanan stood for the first time we came here." And she has this conversation. She turns to him and says, "He's gone. He's really gone, isn't he?" And Ezra's like, "Yeah. But he taught me one last lesson, and I know what we have to do now, thanks to him." And Hera, like, him and Hera have a moment, and Hera goes back to the excavator, and Ezra is about to go when he feels something. He turns and he sees the white Loth wolf in the distance looking at him, and he looks at it, And the Blowforth just walks off and vanishes. And he says, Ezra says, "Goodbye, Kanan. One last time." I think that really shows that the Blowforth was an embodiment of Kanan through the Force. And, you know, it's pretty powerful. In terms of the meat of the episode, like, just there's no words that you can really say. Like, this episode is both amazing and trippy and, like, what? I know when it first came out, there were a lot of people going, "Oh, I can't believe they're doing time travel in Star Wars." But they're not exactly doing time travel. I think the Force works in mysterious ways. The Force made it so that Ezra would find his way there because Ahsoka needed to come back. They needed to bring Ahsoka back. And that was the only way that they could do it. But we already knew that she was back, but we had no idea how she survived the fight with Vader. But now we do. The World Between Worlds is now closed. That door is now closed. They don't know of any other doors and portals. So there's no real way of them bringing it back. But I think it's like a really interesting thing because it ties into something that Yoda says. You know, he's like, you see the present, the past, old friend, you know. Basically, when Yoda tells Luke that he can see the future, he can see the past, old friends long gone. I think this is that conduit. Like, this is how the Force shows you these things. And when Yoda says always in motion is the future, yes, you carve out your own path. But what if the World Between Worlds has numerous pathways to show different, you know, the path, there is like a path of different futures. And as these things happen, like, it closes doors but opens more doors. Like, oh my god, you could like have like a field day with World Between Worlds, and I really don't want to because it might hurt my brain. But it's a very interesting concept, and it ties in really easily with the Force. Like, not easily, but it ties in a lot of concepts that we've learned about the Force in a way. I think this is like a place where the living Force and the cosmic Force can combine, maybe. It's like the one place where they can cross over. I mean, like, the living Force, like, the people are the living Force, and the cosmic Force is what's going on. Like a conduit between of space and time, as Minister Hayden says. And whoever controls the World Between Worlds controls the universe. Well, at least they're keeping Palpatine out for now. It's good to have Ahsoka back. Of course, it's Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni can't seem to just quit with Ahsoka, but I'm sure that when the time is right, he will. I think there's plenty more stories to tell for Ahsoka. So it's just a matter of time before we find out what they are. If rumors are to believe, it could be a matter of weeks with the Mandalorian. But we just have to wait and see. And that's just dated this episode, because I'm recording this just before the third episode of season 2 of Mandalorian comes out. So yes, I've just dated the episode a bit. But yeah, anyway. Two more episodes to go, folks. Two more days till Rebels Remembered. So, thank you for listening. And punch it, Chewie. Hello and welcome to Rebels Revisited. I'm your host, Johnny Orme, and today is the penultimate episode of this series. And we're taking a look at the episode of Fool's Hope. So it starts off, Hera has somehow gotten off of Lothal and has been picked up by Rex and Kallus in the Ghost. And they head to the planet where Rex and Gregor and Wolf used to live in the ATTE. They communicate with Wolf and they land on their new travelling home, which is essentially a giant landing pad on the back of an AT-AT. Inside, you've got Wolf, Gregor, Ketsu, Onyo, and Hondo Anaka, and his Ugnaught helper Melch. Kallus, Rex, and Hera tell them the plan, and the plan is they're going to liberate Lothal. It's not sanctioned by the Rebellion, but they're doing it for Ezra. Hondo is Hondo, very funny, but he gets quite serious at the end where he turns around and he says to Hera, Madame, for that boy, there is nothing I would not do. And I think, you know, that's something that all of them, everyone that Ezra has dealt with, everyone who Ezra has helped, would happily come together to fight with Ezra, to help Ezra. On Lothal, Ezra has a vision that Thrawn is returning, and he gets in touch with Hera and says, look, we've got to act now. Ryder Azad is, like, completely against the idea. Not long later, Ryder Azad gets in touch with Governor Price and gives her a deal. He offers Ezra, Sabine, Zeb, and Hera, and the rest of the rebels on Lothal for amnesty. So he gives them the coordinates, and the Empire goes there in force, including Ruch and Governor Price. There's a pretty big fight that ensues. Pretty much most of the episode is the battle. And, you know, it goes from the rebels seemingly getting on to coming out on top, then the Empire kind of starts to win. Meanwhile, in space, the Ghost has come out of hyperspace undetected, and they use a method taught to them by Hondo, of all people, where they get right up close to a hyperspace lane, and when an Imperial cargo vessel comes out of hyperspace, they latch onto it and pass through the Imperial blockade, and that plan goes to that plan actually works. So, well done, Hondo, I guess. The Empire basically win the fight on the ground. Just as the Ghost arrives, Kallus and Rex debark, and get Kallus, Rex, Gregor, and Wolf all debark, or join the battle, and all of the rebels hide in a cave, and when Ruch chases them in, Governor Price is outside, after gloating and then revealing that Ryder Azadi, you know, basically lied to her to trick her into getting there. So the rebels hide in a cave whilst Hera, Melch, and Hondo fight the last remaining dropships in the sky. The Imperials chase them into the cave, and they encounter the Loth Wolves pack, and the wolves basically wipe out the Empire, save for like a handful of stormtroopers and Governor Price. Even Ruch is thrown from the platform. And in the end, Azadi handcuffs Governor Price. Hera says, right, you know, you've done a great job. And he's like, yeah, but we've got to work quickly because, you know, we're going to take back the city and we're going to kick the Empire out and show the galaxy that, you know, they can fight back. And that's the end of the episode. Essentially, this episode is like the prelude. This is the build-up. This is setting the stage. This is putting all the pieces in place, ready for the finale. And they do a really good job. It's a pretty epic battle in terms of rebels. Once the Lothwolves kind of get involved, it's just fantastic. The Kevin Kiner's music in the Lothwolf attack is just beautiful. You know, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking, but it's brilliant Star Wars music for what's going on. Almost reminiscent of the Luke and Vader duel in the Death Star throne room, with kind of like that creepy choir in the background, in the background of it. It just is so good, so fantastic, and it's one of those moments where you're like, Kevin Kiner, you have outdone yourself here, sir. Fooling Governor Price is pretty easy, even, and Ezra admits that. They never would have fooled Thrawn, but because he's off-world, they needed, and with Ezra having a vision of him coming back, that's why they had to put the plan into action pretty quickly. You know, it is a setup. It sets up the finale pretty well. I'm pretty sure that they put False Hope and the finale out on the same day. I think it was like a massive event. I can't really remember though, but you know, you could have easily had it all as like 1 hour and a half long event. And it totally works that way. But you know, this is one episode and the next one is a whole episode, so. But there's not really much more I can really say about this one, because it is a build up. The battle is good. The story, you know, it's putting, like I said, it's just getting all those pieces put into place. So it's good. It's very good. But there's not a lot of meat to it. The meat comes later, or in this case, it comes tomorrow. So I'm going to head off now. I'm actually going to watch it now, and I'm looking forward to it. So before I go, I'd like to say thank you for listening. And punch it, Chewie.
Hello and welcome to Rebels Revisited. I'm your host, Johnny Orm, and today we're looking at Family Reunion and Farewell. And yes, this is the second part of this episode, because of a technically I had a little bit of scheduling snafu, but because of that I can release this and last episode together, like the episodes were released back in 2017. So, the final episode of Rebels. Now, going back to that fateful morning, I remember waking up, like setting an alarm and waking up at like 6 in the morning so I could watch it before having to get up for work. And of course, I was doing some internet tomfoolery to watch it, because it wasn't, hadn't been released in the UK. I don't think any of season 4 had been shown in the UK by that point, but I found a way to watch it, and it was god awful in quality. It was so bad, but it was one of those things. I knew I needed to watch it. I've already had episodes in this season spoiled, because I watched them late, I'd like, you know, I didn't get to see them in the morning as they were released. I was seeing them later on. I'd catch things on Twitter, I'd catch things on Facebook, all these things. So I made the decision, I didn't want any spoilers for this, so I made sure I woke up and I watched it in awful quality and looked forward to that night when my wife and my daughter would be in bed and I could sit and watch it again in good quality. And I did, and it made me every bit as emotional as the first time. So this episode, this was a perfect ending for Rebels, I think. You know, the crew, of course, minus Kanan, pulling off a daring, desperate, and foolhardy mission, and, you know, with every bit of the odds stacked against them, you know, all the friends that they had made along the way, you know, coming back from full, you know, from a fool's hope, and, you know, really kind of just going all out. Like, this season has just been one thing, going all out constantly, and it's been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, this episode, it's like, hey, so, you know, we were not holding back, we weren't pulling any punches, well, here we are. And this episode, to top it all off, is just gonna blow you away, and it does. Thanks to A Fool's Hope, the setup of the plan of getting into the Imperial base in Lothal City. You know, you don't have to worry about that. You know they're getting to the base, they're using Governor Price's codes, they're gonna, you know, you don't need to kind of factor in how they're gonna do this. We know how they're gonna do it. And, you know, we get to learn a few new things. We learn that the Imperial base on Lothal is actually a ship. Who would have thought that? You know, that they just landed in the middle of the city. Of course. we get to learn that Pergil communicates over frequency zero. And we also learn that Ugnaughts cannot fly. In one of the episode's funniest moments, when breaching the Imperial stronghold as a distraction, Zeb launches Melch onto the canopy of the vehicle, of the ship, which distracts the crew inside long enough for Ezra to lead his team into the control center and take it. With a wonderful line from Hondo, "They do fly," which is a terrible Hondo impression. But anyway, you know, you would think, you know, having Hondo in it and Hondo's kind of moments are very well placed. During the battle in the shield generator facility, where Ruch has disabled the shields, and they need to get them back on before Thrawn bombards the city, Melch is seemingly killed, and, you know, Hondo runs over and he blasts at the stormtroopers, and once the fighting is over, Hondo is there lamenting his fallen comrade, and when Melch wakes up and hugs Hondo, he quickly diverts his the lament into a flurry of reasons why Melch is lucky to be in his service, in a way that only Hondo can. Getting to see the clones in action in various ways. Gregor and Rex fighting in the ship, whilst Wolf is with Mark Batten and Visago with the Ghost. Gregor and Rex get to, you know, they battle against the Imperials for the shield generators, and Gregor is killed. But before he dies, he gets that moment with Rex, and he says that he was so happy that he got to choose what he fought for in the end. And, you know, that's so, like, it's important for clones, because they were bred to fight a war that they had no stake in. You know, they were created to fight this war. They didn't have a choice, but they have this choice, and they chose to follow Ezra. And, you know, it was the right choice, because, you know, they got to choose. The only way you can kind of put it, they got to choose. Couple of moments where it's like, oh god, they're gonna kill off a main character. I really thought Zeb was gonna be a goner. Honestly. Especially when he was fighting Ruch in the chill generator room, like when Zeb dives down to get Ruch, and they end up in the machinery, like the shield generators themselves, are kept, and they fight whilst trying to climb out. And, you know, they you know, Zeb's like, turn it on, don't worry about me. And of course I'm sat there going, I am worrying about you, come on. And of course he does make it out. Follows it up with a great line. When the shield is activated and Thrawn begins trying to bombard the city, just in, like, you know, the shield goes up in the nick of time, in true Rebels fashion. He tries to call, he sends a transmission to Ruch, and he's like, what's going on? And Zeb answers, he says, yeah, you can hold on, he's a little bit busy right now. And then you can hear like this screaming in the background, the screaming stops. He's like, yeah, he's not coming to talk to you. You know, it's pretty dark humor, but, you know, it kind of just, it's, you know, it's a joke that would never have kind of been in the, it would never have even reached the writer's room for season one. But, you know, it doesn't feel out of place by the time we get to season four, which just goes to show, like, how the show matured as it went on. Ezra gets to face a real tough choice. As the episode begins, he's talking to the hollow picture of his parents and him, and he's, like, saying, you know, everything I've done is because of you, you know, you taught me to be like this, following your footsteps, and Hera overhears him. You know, so then when he's faced with the choice of surrender to Thrawn or watch as the city is destroyed, you know, everyone knows Ezra has no choice. He has to surrender to Thrawn. It's not the, it's not what we want him to do, but it's what he needs to do. So, you know, he goes to Thrawn. He escapes his crew, essentially, because Hera's like, I don't want you to go, you're staying here. And, you know, everything that he says to Sabine at the beginning of the episode kind of comes to play. And he's like, you know, I know you've got my back. You know, you need to promise me that you'll... He's counting on her, and I was going to say, promise me you'll find me, but that was what he said, that's what he said to Ahsoka. But, you know, he's like, you've always got my back, I need you to have my back, and all this stuff. and he's counting on her. And, you know, she's the one who distracts everyone else to let him go. Between her and Chopper, you know. And, you know, it's that moment between them where it's like, you know, they've been through a lot. They're kids, you know, they've grown up together the last few years. You know, they are a family. They're brother and sister. And it's sweet. It's a far cry from when Ezra first met her and he had that really annoying, you know, very young teenage crush on her. And, you know, again, it's just how the characters have matured, and it's very well done. And then when he's on the Star Destroyer, you know, he meets the hologram of Palpatine, and voiced wonderfully by Ian McDiarmid. You know, he's talking to, you know, pre-prune face Palpatine. And Ezra knows there's something wrong with this. He completely knows. And when he's offered the chance to go through the rebuilt Jedi Temple doorway and be with his parents, and we know it's a trap. You know, everyone watching knows this is a trap. But, you know, Ezra, you can see that he's tempted. Why wouldn't he be? You know, he's missed his parents. You know, he felt them die. He wants to see them again. And he's given that choice. Even though it's the wrong choice, he's given that choice. And he is so close to taking it. You can just see it. And, you know, of course he doesn't, you know, because if he did, then the Emperor would become even more powerful. Because Ezra would have opened up a doorway for Palpatine. So Ezra destroys it and ends up having to fight off Palpatine's thugs, kind of royal guards, like ninja royal guards. I mean, cool. You know, he's faced with all these tough choices, and the final choice is, you know, where do I escape this? You know, he could have just escaped the ship after that, but he doesn't. He goes and faces Thrawn, and in facing Thrawn, you know, they vanish. They go into hyperspace because of the Purrgil. So it's like okay, all of those choices that he's made, are all the right ones. Because if he hadn't stayed, Thrawn could have escaped. And you know, the whole operation would have been for nothing. Ezra had to be there to stop him from escaping. So, and then, you know, his goodbye to the crew, you know, it's like, right, well, you know, you're my family and I love you and I'm going to miss you and I can't wait to see you all again. It's lovely. And very well done. And Hera, you know, she gets a tough storyline because, you know, she's following Ezra, she's helping Ezra, and then, you know, she's trying to keep the rest of her family together. Because she is mum. And when Ezra's like, no, I've got to go, she's like, no, you stay here, that is an order. You know, she does that mum thing where she's like, no, you're not doing anything, you're not going anywhere, you're staying here and we're figuring this out. And, you know, sometimes mums can be wrong when they do that. And, you know, in the end, she realizes that. And, you know, as much as she wants to keep her family together, you know, sometimes family has to take that step. And, you know, sometimes families do split. It's, you know, but it's not always bad. It's not always for a bad reason, you know. Ezra had to go for a very good reason. And Zeb's just Zeb. You know, He does his Zeb thing. He throws Melch. He shouts at stormtroopers. He questions whether the plan was a good idea when they're in the midst of it, because of course they lock all the stormtroopers into the base as Zeb and his team are trying to get to the shield generator room. Of course they're stuck in a building full of stormtroopers. Of course the stormtrooper's going to chase them. You know, Zeb's like, did anyone think that, you know, when we said, let's get ourselves stuck inside a building full of stormtroopers, that, you know, we'd be stuck inside a building full of stormtroopers. So, you know, it's all, you know, Zeb's just Zeb. And of course they win, and, you know, and Lothal is liberated. And, you know, we get kind of the Return of the Jedi celebration across Lothal as the ghost flies overhead. And I'm not gonna lie, it's like one of those moments that does bring a tear to your eye, because it's like, that they won, they did it. You know, this is a big win for the Empire, for the Rebellion, you know, but at the same time, they're not working for the Rebellion. You know, they'd left the Rebellion. So, there you go, that's the loophole. You know, this isn't a win for the Rebellion, this is a win for Lothal. And then we get the epilogue. And the epilogue is something of absolute beauty. You know, Sabine narrating it whilst in the tower that Ezra lived in before he joined the crew. And we find her in the exact same position as we first met him. Leaning on the railing, chin on arms. And a couple of T-65 X-Wings fly over with a Jedi transport from the Republic era, pre-Empire. And she goes to a room with the mural, the beautiful mural of the Ghost Crew with Lothwars and the Lost Cat. And she tells us what's happened to everyone. And it's sweet. It's lovely. Zeb and Kallus have gone off on a almost Lord of the Rings-esque Legolas and Gimli adventure that we learn about in the appendices of Return of the King. When, like, Legolas takes Gimli to elf places, and Gimli takes Legolas to dwarf places. Zeb takes him to Lirasan. Zeb takes Kallus to Lirasan, the Lasat homeworld. Kallus believed that he had killed all of the Lasat. All the Lasat were dead because of him, because he led the campaign on Lasan. But really, you know, Lirasan is the true homeworld of the Lasat people. And Zeb takes him, and he is welcomed as one of them. And I think that is fantastic, because, you know, their entire arc, I mean, from season one, these two were connected because of Kallus' past. And, you know, Zeb spends most of season one wanting to kill Kallus because of Kallus' role in the sacking of Lasan. But by the time they get to the Honorable Ones, you know, and Kallus is beginning to have a change of heart, and Zeb, you know, talking to Zeb changes his view. And they build a kind of mutual respect that leads Kallus to becoming Fulcrum. And, you know, I kind of wish we'd seen more of the two of them fighting together in season four, but that's kind of more of a, I want to see this because I think it would be cool, rather than would it have served the story. And I don't think it would have done. But getting that moment between them at the end truly is wonderful. And we learn about Hera fighting at Endor, as well as Commander Rex. Where Commander Rex fought, we don't know. But there are speculations and rumours and everything. And the introduction of Jacen Syndulla, Hera and Kanan's child, which was hinted at in early on in the episode during Ezra's kind of dialogue with the picture of his parents, where Hera rests a hand on her stomach. And, you know, knowing that the ghost shows up in The Rise of Skywalker, is Jacen there? Also, the question is, you know, they do hint at Jacen being Force-sensitive. What happens there? Is he at Luke's temple? I don't think so. Let's move on. And I kind of wonder where Chopper is. Is Chopper with Hera and Jacen? I hope so. But yeah, it's like really nice kind of seeing where they're at. And of course, Sabine's story ends when she, you know, she says, you know, she wondered if, you know, what was Ezra counting on her for? Was he counting on her to protect Lothal? Well, you know, this far out from the end of the war, which we can, I mean, there's no time period given in the episode, but thanks to just some rumours, well, not rumours, but things said by Dave Filoni after The Mandalorian, Chapter 13, the Jedi, that it's highly possible that the epilogue of Rebels happens after the Ahsoka episode of The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian being set roughly 5 years after Endor. So Ahsoka arriving to Sabine in theory would be between 5 and 6 years after the Battle of Endor. What was Ahsoka doing in that time? Before she became Ahsoka the White, in her really cool Gandalf clothes with her Gandalf staff and her very Gandalf demeanor, she was looking for Grand Admiral Thrawn. We know this because they said it in The Mandalorian. But that's Sabine's journey, and Sabine will goes with Ahsoka. So, if the announced Ahsoka series is going to focus on on the quest to find Ezra, we can safely assume that Sabine is involved. Which would be so cool. Taya Sakaar for Sabine, please. So yeah, like it really ties the whole series up. And it does leave us with questions, but those are questions that, you know, we want to know the answer to, but they aren't questions for this series to answer. Those are questions for another time. And I look forward to learning those answers. But Rebels posing those questions was perfect. Like I said, this was a wonderful series finale. If a little corny, having as many of their friends and allies fighting to save Lothal. But Rebels was never really about the rebellion. It was about the crew. And the crew had a job. And that job was to save Lothal, and they do. And it is very well done. The animation is beautiful. You can tell that they really held back some budget for this, for this episode, and for A Fool's Hope, because it just looks wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And really, it was good to see them, Filoni, get to finish the series the way he wanted. Because, you know, even though, yes, Clone Wars got its revival, you know, though, you know, that was just this, that was the, for the fans to say, hey, look, we're going to tell, like, these last handful of stories. You know, it wasn't a true, it didn't feel like a true ending of the Clone Wars. Just one that was kind of like, hey, look, we're going to give you this. This was like, this Rebel started and it finished the way that Filoni planned it, the way Filoni wanted it. And he did a wonderful job. And what was doubly wonderful is learning that Filoni voiced Chopper for the entirety of the series, which I think is absolutely hilarious. So, yeah. So there we go. Rebels Revisited has come to an end. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Everyone who's listened from day one all the way to now, everyone who's jumped on here and there, listened to the odd episode or two, just waiting for the episodes of Rebels that they absolutely loved, and, you know, jumping onto this episode, jumping onto the here to hear me waffle on about them. Thank you. I've got a couple of ideas for things to do in the future for the podcast. I might follow a very similar format to this, with something. So pick a series and record, like reviews. I've got an idea of what I'm going to do. I just don't know when I'm going to do it. And of course, coming up in May, we have Bad Batch, so the podcast will return for that as well. So yes, keep the subscription running, because the show will be back for season 4. When that will be it before Bad Batch or after, I don't know, but just know we're coming back soon. We'll be back in the next couple of months. So without further ado, thank you for listening once again. And punch it chewing. Oh, and happy Rebels from a midday. Don't forget that. Bye.
And there we have it, my friends. The end of Rebels Revisited. Thank you for going on this little deep dive into the Ahsoka and Sabine and Thrawn centric episodes. I've probably missed one or two, but I did get the majority of these off of a list online, so I can't take all the blame, although I'm the one editing it. So yeah, but anyway, like I say, thank you for listening. Next week we will be returning to our usual scheduled programming, with a catch up on blog posts from the last few weeks, and let's take a look at my life in Star Wars. And of course, next week is the premiere of Ahsoka. So, probably do the episode on Thursday, unless I decide to do a separate episode for Ahsoka. Haven't quite decided yet. But yeah, there could be two episodes, there could be one episode. We'll find out next week. Depends on time. Summer holidays, kids, housework, it all adds up. That's why it's nearly 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm recording intros and outros. So, thank you again for listening. If you would like to visit the blog, you can do so at mystarslifedate.com. You can hit Facebook at facebook.com/LifeDebtBlogPod. Follow me on Twitter. Sorry, X. Sorry, Elon. Follow me on X. At Bloodyorm, BLOODYORME. Instagram.com/MyStarWasLifeDebt. And MyStarWasLifeDebt at threads.com. And if you would like to financially contribute to the blog and podcast, you can do so over at coffee.com/. My Star Wars Life Debt. That's ko-fi.com/MyStarWarsLifeDebt, where you can either make donation towards the blog or hit the digital store on there, which where you can pick up the Life Debt Holiday Special, aka the Breaking of a Fan, and Yum Dum in a Life Debt Podcast Season 1, both of sale at coffee.com/MyStarWasLifeDebt. Or if you'd like to become a member, you can head over to patreon.com/MyStarWasLifeDebt, where for £3 a month you get your name in lights, well, on screens. Sorry, that tickled me for some reason, probably because it's nearly 2 o'clock. Get your name on our thank you page. You can get both the Life Debt Holiday Special, aka Broken of a Fan, and all, and I'm saying all, of Yub Nubbin, the Life Debt Podcast, 2 seasons, 26 episodes. And those are included in the Patreon subscription. You will also get ad-free blog posts and podcast episodes. So there we go. That's how you can help keep the blog and podcast going. So without further ado, thank you again for listening and punch it chewy. Bye.